You're welcome to Outbeat Radio on KRCB Windsor Santa Rosa, a program that focuses on issues by, for, and or about members of the gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender communities. You can hear Outbeat Radio every Sunday night at 8 p.m.
This is Living Proof, and we're your hosts. I'm Dr. Diana Grayer, and next to me is my co-host and wife, Sheridan Gold. Tonight in studio, we have a lucky woman sitting across from us, Ian Weaver, artist, illustrator, educator, and author.
Welcome, Ian. How you doing?
Thank you. Great to be here.
Ian began her career in New York City as an artist and illustrator. She was the illustrator for Our Bodies, Ourselves, and that is like something we probably all remember, people listening to this show. We'll ask you about that, too. And here in Sonoma County, continues to teach art, express herself with her art, and write. Her current work in fiction and poetry focuses on challenging the fear that promotes prejudice while supporting civil rights for women, minorities, and the LGBT community. She'll be discussing her book, Bleed Through, which paints a picture of diverse characters winding their way through 200 years of history. What unfolds is pure magic.
So this is sure to be a very interesting show as we learn about the life of Ian Weaver and how she navigates the world. But first, here's news and events with Outbeat member and our engineer, Greg Moralia.
I have found Outbeat Radio News, your source for LGBT news from the North Bay and beyond.
Good evening, this is Greg Moralia with your Outbeat Radio News for this Sunday, April 5th, 2015. A teenager is in hiding today after his own parents set him on fire after finding out he was gay. This horrific incident occurred in Azerbaijan and reportedly came after the 18-year-old had been blackmailed by an anonymous person on Facebook for months. The person threatened to out him to his family by sending a picture of him marching in a pride parade. The photo was ultimately sent to his mother and father, which sparked the shocking attack on their own son. A friend of the teen said, "The parents attempted to burn him with gasoline, punching and kicking him. Even though he ran away from home, a lot of his personal belongings and documents were taken away by his family, meaning that he has no chance of leaving the country. A friend said that he's in a safe place now. However, a threat to his life is continuous. Homosexuality is not illegal in Azerbaijan, but is looked down upon in the culture." And here in the U.S., Indiana Governor Mike Pence signed a revised version of his religious freedom law this last Thursday, hoping to quiet national criticism over the law, which would have allowed businesses to discriminate against lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people. Pence said, quote, "Over the last week, the law has become a subject of great misunderstanding and controversy across the state and our nation. However we got here, we are where we are, and it's important that our state take action to address the concerns that have been raised and move forward." Businesses including Apple and the Marriott condemned the law, and some states and localities signed orders boycotting Indiana altogether. In the end, the revised Freedom of Religion Act fix didn't really make anyone happy. While many LGBT groups said they were relieved that the potentially harmful effects of the act were addressed, they were disappointed that the state didn't go further by simply repealing the measure. And here in San Francisco, Police Chief Greg Suhr said on Friday he's moving to fire a police captain, a sergeant, and six officers implicated in sending and receiving racist and homophobic text messages that came to light during a federal corruption probe. The chief said, quote, "There were eight standing officers who engaged in this repulsive conversation via text messages. I have suspended them, and they have been referred to the police commission with a recommendation of only termination, as it should be. Their conduct is incompatible with that of a police officer," end quote. Officer Sean Doherty, an 11-year veteran, Sergeant Michael Wibison, a 12-year veteran, and Knight Supervising Captain Jason Fox, 42 years old and a 20-year veteran of the department, are among those facing termination. Suhr said that the fact that such a high-ranking member of the department was involved in this exchange of offensive text messages was particularly disheartening. And here in Sonoma County, Thanksgiving Lutheran Church will host a screening of an historic LGBT civil rights documentary titled Lewd and Lascivious. The film recounts the New Year's Eve 1965 police raid on California Hall in San Francisco, where a fundraising dance was being held to provide a financial base for the newly organized Council on Religion and Homosexuality. ordained Protestant denominational clergy had previously met with members of the San Francisco Police Department as plans for the dance were developed. In spite of those contacts, the San Francisco Police Department severely harassed the dance and eventually arrested six people. The resulting court trial and its findings forever changed the police response to an emerging lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender community. Ms. Joanne Chadwick, Executive Director of Emeritus of the ELCA, and the Reverend Charles Lewis, the San Francisco Knight Minister Emeritus, who were among those present at the dance, will be in person at the showing to answer questions and provide additional comments. Admission is free, and it will happen at the church located at 1225 Fulton Road in Santa Rosa this coming Saturday, April 11th at 3 p.m. Now here's your calendar events for the coming week. On Monday, April 6th at 2 p.m., the Sonoma General LGBT Support Group will happen at the Sonoma Community Center, 276 East Napa Road in Sonoma. This is for young people 12 to 18 years of age. And on Wednesday, April 5th at 5 p.m., Spectrum's Youth Support Group will gather at the Spectrum LGBT Center, 910 Irwin Street in San Rafael. And also on Wednesday at 12 noon, Coffee, Conversation, and Community LGBT Senior Discussions will happen at the Novato Human Needs Center, 1907 Novato Boulevard in Novato. And on Thursday, April 9th at 12 noon, the Men's Brown Bag Luncheon Discussion will happen at the Spectrum Center, 910 Irwin Street in San Rafael. For more information about LGBT events happening here in the North Bay, go to gaysonoma.com. And for all of the latest LGBT news headlines, go to our website at outbeatnews.com. Be sure to follow us on Facebook and Twitter for updates from Outbeat Radio News all week long. For Gary Carnevale, I'm Greg Moralia. Now back to Living Proof with Sheridan Gold and Dr. Diana Grayer.
Outbeat Radio News, your source for LGBT news from the North Bay and beyond.
So, Cher, two more events that weren't on our calendar this week you've got coming up.
Yeah, thanks, Greg. So, everybody, April 17 and 18 is the Vagina Monologues at Santa Rosa JC, and both Diana and myself will be there narrating and introducing all the monologues. As well, Sisters Rising, the group that we perform with, will be performing our premiere piece there called We Want Change and We Want It Now. And it's going to be terrific. So hope you all come out there and see that. You can get tickets on Brown Paper Tickets. Just look for Santa Rosa JC Vagina Monologues. And then on June 2nd, I am having a concert with the UU Santa Rosa. It's a fundraiser for the UU Santa Rosa. And it's called An Evening of Healing Music with Sheridan Gold and Friends. And I'll be playing drum and my Native American flutes and silver flutes. And it's just going to be a wonderful, wonderful evening. Diana will be there with some spoken word, and we've got a dancer and a vocalist and some drummers and storyteller, and it should be a lovely, lovely evening. Again, you can go to Brown Paper Tickets and just, you know, type in my name, Sheridan Gold, and you'll see the concert there. So a couple things coming up for us. But anyway, thank you for the news and events, Greg. And we are back in studio with Ian Weaver. And again, welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Nice to have you, Ian. So let's start with all the hats that you wear. I listed artist, illustrator, educator, author, and I know that's just the tip of the iceberg. I mean, I know there's a lot more things that you do. So to give the audience a little history about these talents that you have.
Well, thank you. I started off as a medical illustrator, and I've been an artist pretty much all my life, which sort of leads into the bleed through because the main character is an artist. I'll talk more about that. Right now, I've taken my art to another level of teaching. I've taught public school for many years, but I'm teaching seniors, and I work with them in several residences around Sonoma County. And it's been a wonderful experience. Most of my seniors are between 80 and 95. The majority, and most have never painted before. And I have a technique because in the public sector, when I worked in public school with children, I worked with a lot of children who had learning disabilities of various kinds. And so I always use art as a way to teach, mostly English I was teaching at the time. And I developed very easy modalities of teaching art. enabling pretty much anybody to be able to paint. And so I give them a money-back guarantee. Of course, it's free. But, but you know, they think that's pretty cute. And I have a method by which that I have a very, very easy technique to enable them to paint. And that some of them have won ribbons in shows already. They've gone to the Citrus Fair, and they've gone to the several different community shows, Santa Rosa County County Fair. And they're very good. They're very, very good. So that's been very rewarding. And we have great fun in our classes. We had last week, I had so many students in my class that we had to limit the number coming in because we just had limited space. But I had 12 all at once in a fairly small room, and they all want to come. So it's really exciting.
So can I ask you a question? Yeah. What if somebody's listening here and would like to take an art class from you?
That's a great question. I just opened a new studio with seven other artists. It's called Art Flair, and it's in the old barracks building down in Santa Rosa, just at the sort of edge of Santa Rosa off of South Wright Road. And I will be holding classes. I've been already holding classes on Fridays. I probably will hold classes Mondays and Fridays in the morning. Anybody can contact Art Flair.
And they find it on the internet?
Yes, they can find it on the internet, yes. Mm-hmm. Artflair.net.
Mm-hmm. Artflair.net. Yes. S-A-R-T-F-L-A-I-R?
No, F-L-A-R-E.
Ah.
That's what I had.
But you were right. You were half right, because the course is called Acrylics with Flair.
Ah.
F-L-A-I-R.
Interesting.
Yeah. And so I've been doing teaching, I've been doing art, and I'm, of course, writing. I am a member of Redwood Writers, and which is a wonderful organization. And I wrote this novel. Took me about 10 years, actually, because I was writing and working at the same time. But I published it about a year ago, and I'm writing the sequel right now.
So let's back up just a little bit. When you talked about Redwood Writers,
mm-hmm.
Could you say a little bit about that? Because you said it's a great organization, but you know, someone listening might not know what you're talking about.
Okay.
Could you say just a little bit about what that
sure.
is?
Sure. It's a chapter of the California Writers Club, which is a statewide writers club. And this is the Sonoma County chapter. And we meet at the Flamingo Hotel on the second Sunday of every month. Our meetings are from 3 to 5 o'clock, and there is a writer's support group earlier than that, about 1:32, I think it is. And it's a marvelous organization for people who are already writers, who are starting out to write. It does not matter what genre you're writing in, or what subject matter, poetry, prose, essays, whatever you're writing, plays. Mm. And it's just a great support group, and it's a great professional group in terms of, you know, one, if you want to publish, there's a lot of information. They have workshops every month on how to publish your book, whether to go traditional publishing, self-publishing, things like that. It's a really interesting group of people. It's been extremely helpful.
Mm. And so they're on the internet as well. Could you give the website address
for
them?
Yes. Redwoodwriters.org, I think.
Okay. Redwoodwriters.org.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah.
So how did they help you in with your book?
Well, I met a lot of people there who were designers and photographers. And I did the cover of my book, so I used a very good photographer for the cover once I had done the drawing. And I also met people that were helpful in making some changes to the design, things like that.
Okay.
So there were some wonderful, and just generally being able to get feedback about what I was doing, hearing what other people's experiences were of self-publishing and traditional publishing, things like that.
Oh, okay.
Really helpful.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's begin to talk about Bleed Through. How did you come up with this idea 10 years ago?
Well, it
or
was
maybe before then.
Yeah.
Huh?
Well, the idea was really a long time ago. I would say more like 20 years ago, 25 years ago. I had read a book that just fascinated me. I was in a process of thinking about the nature of reality. And I was reading a lot of books on quantum physics and New Age material, some of which was not so great. And then I came across a book by Jane Roberts, who is the woman who wrote the Seth material. And she had written a trilogy, the first of which is called The Education of Oversoul 7. And it was a wonderful book. It was very hard to read, and it was complicated, and I kept getting lost in it. But I understood the dynamic of what she was trying to say, and it impressed me so much. I mean, I thought about it for years. And I thought, you know, someday I'm going to write a book for a mass audience, like just a general reading audience, that uses those concepts but does it in a way that everybody could understand it. Because I couldn't I could barely understand it myself. And it sort of ties in with how I taught children, you know, literature. I taught them, they were not English was not their first language, most of the children I taught, and yet I taught them Shakespeare, and I taught them Kafka, and I taught all the great classics, because I figured out a way to speak to them, and I figured out a way to reach them. And I thought, well, I could write a material about this subject, which I thought was a really important subject, which was basically, what if there was such a thing as past lives? What if we really did live more than one life? And it really led me to believe that my relationship with people that I met, that sometimes you meet somebody and you feel like you know them. You know that feeling? Mm-hmm. Or you meet somebody and you just click with them. It's like, you know, just like that. Or you have a tremendous sense of what someone else is going through, almost like an empath. And I took those ideas and I thought, well, how could I turn this into something where you could really understand prejudice? And I had grown up in a family that was very involved in the civil rights movement, and so was I. And I grew up in an environment that was very open about talking about things like prejudice. So these things were just gelling over the years, you know, and all of a sudden I thought, I have to write this book. And I set my goal to retire from everything, teaching and working. And the universe must have heard me, because my jobs, you know, went under. There were a lot of nonprofits I was working for, and the funding sort of disappeared, and so with it went the jobs. Mm. And I thought, well, maybe this is a great opportunity to take this time now that I'm getting to a certain age and move to Sonoma County.
from where?
From San Francisco. Uh-huh. And I've always lived in cities. I've become a country girl, and take the time to write this book, and that's what I did.
A lot of people wish they had what you had, which is time.
Yeah.
And it's great that you took the advantage of the time that you had, Al.
Well, I couldn't have done it without all my wonderful friends who were very supportive. And, you know, I sacrificed a lot in terms of, you know, sort of piecing together a living, barely. Mm-hmm. But again, I had a lot of support and a lot of caring people around me. And I was determined, very determined as well. Mm-hmm. To do this. So
you mentioned past lives.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering, I mean, I read the book, so mm-hmm. the questions that I'm going to ask you is basically for the listeners.
Mm-hmm.
But you mentioned past lives, and then you have the title Bleed Through. Mm-hmm. So how does that relate?
Well, first of all, Bleed Through is the main character is an artist. And so I could use my experience as an artist to create the foundation for her. And one of the term bleed through in artistic terms is often applied to something that where you put one color down on a canvas, or even if you're staining a dresser and you want it to be lighter and you put white paint over it or you put a light color over it, that stain or the paint underneath often bleeds through. Mm-hmm. And so it is a painter's term, in which is comes about in the course of her understanding of things. It's also about life, that memories bleed through, and that's really in the course of the book. The term is used for various sorts of things. One is a painter's term, one is a memory, one is a past life relationship. Mm-hmm. So it came to be a very useful term for me.
And it's educational, too, for the reader who's not a painter.
Right.
To learn.
Right, right.
I think it's terrific. If someone were to ask you what your book's about, how would you answer that question?
Well, it is about a young woman. Initially, she's a young woman. She's a child. And she grows up. She realizes that she's gay. She's a lesbian. And she is sort of on the outs of a lot of things because she's different in so many ways. It is also about three other characters that she is not aware of. And they are not aware of each other. And then they become aware and connected to each other, and it takes place over a 200-year period. And mostly it takes place in the United States. The sequel will not only take place in the United States, but it really started out here because it was something I was familiar with. I've traveled a lot in the United States, and so it was something I could be familiar with, which is not to say that there wasn't a tremendous amount of research that went into this, because it is a historical novel to a certain degree. It is commercial fiction. And so there are four families. Basically, there's the main character, which is Rita, and she is comes from a Jewish immigrant family. She's a second generation. Her parents are first generation. But she lives with her grandmother, who is from the old country, as they say. It is about another character who is from an African-American family, but also she is part Seminole as well, Seminole Indian as well. And she comes up from the South. They emigrate during the Great Migration to Philadelphia. And it's about their lives. And another character is a young woman whose family has come across on the Oregon Trail during the pioneer days in the early 1840s. And her family is Irish and Catholic, and they settle in Oregon. And another family that is Native American, particularly from the Sioux Lakota tribe, and their experience during the 1812 War of 1812, etc. And these. Because they're such diverse characters and they have such diverse experiences, they're all dealing with one basic experience, which is prejudice. Mm-hmm. And how they do that and how they cope with things that happen to them, the way in which they're treated because of who they are, or because of their life circumstances, or because of just their situations that they're in, is similar and yet not similar. And it relates to the time in which they live. It relates to the place in which they live. And it relates to American history. It's a lot.
It is a lot. That's a huge amount. I just can't even see how you... Let's see, your book is 200 and...
It's 300 pages.
300 pages. I don't see how you get all that in just a small amount of 300 pages.
Well, that's the trick I go back to in learning, in teaching children with disabilities. I make it very easy. But I'll tell you the real, putting all of this information in this book, I really didn't know how. First of all, I wanted it to be readable. I wanted it to be easy to read. And a professor friend of mine says to me, this is easy to read, but it is not simplistic, which I thought was a really, really good way of saying what it was that I was doing, which is why it took me so long. As a matter of fact, I got stopped about 2 years into it. I just was at a dead stop. I said, how am I going to do this? How am I going to put all these characters in? And I hate a book with lots of characters, usually, because I can't follow it. So how am I going to do this so it's easy to follow? And then I read, just by chance, a friend of mine gave me this book to read, which is Barbara Kingsolver's Prodigal Summer, in which she does this thing with three characters. They all live in the same place at the same time. It's not the same. But she the format of how she arranges the book really helped me. It was like an aha moment, you know. It really helped me say, oh, I could do it that way. If I format it that way, then it will be clear. And so each chapter has a heading of the person, the date, the place. So you always know what chapter you're reading and who you're reading, and it just flows. And I made each chapter very, like a short, like each one is almost like a short story. It's a snapshot of each person's life at the particular time. So you get the gist, and you don't have to go into huge detail.
I'm sitting here thinking about people who have gone before us, who really are our teachers in an indirect way, and how you looked at this book and you got an idea. It helped you get over being stuck.
Yeah.
And I look at myself as a musician, and I feel sometimes I'm stuck. And then I listen to someone and they play and I go, oh,
yeah.
Well, I could do that too. Yeah. It's not copying word for word or note for note. Right. It's ideas and concepts and helping us get over humps.
That's right. That's right.
So that's a really great lesson that you learned, and thank you for helping all of us remember.
Yeah, we have to help each other.
We have to help each other. It's about time for a music break, and so you have brought a song with you, and I'd like to invite you to introduce the song, and then we'll play it.
Oh, great. Thank you. Nina Simone, who I adore. And the name of the song is I Wish I Would Know How It Would Be to Be Free. I think I've said it more or less this way that it is. And I just have always loved that song. It just speaks to me.
Thank you. Enjoy.
Say all the things that I should say, say them loud, say them clear, for the whole round world to hear. I wish I could share all the love that's in my heart, remove all the bars that keep us apart. To be me, then you'd see and agree that every man should be free. I wish I could give all I'm longing to give. I wish I could live
And if you just joined us, this is Living Proof with Diana and Sheridan, and we are speaking with Ian Weaver, and she brought the song I Wish I Knew How It Would Feel to Be Free by Nina Simone. Thank you very much for bringing that song. It was absolutely gorgeous.
Mm-hmm. I know.
It's really great.
Yes.
Really, really powerful.
Yeah.
So we left off talking, Ian, about your the book Bleed Through and the characters. And I was just talking and thinking about, at the break, at the music break, about how your presentation, how poised and how comfortable it is to be sitting across from you. It's like sitting in front of the fireplace. I'm just curious about your characters. How did they come to you? Because they seem so rich and powerful. And then the research that went along with that. So I'm just curious about
Well, you know, a lot of writers say, you know, as I started writing, the characters just started telling me things. And that was true for me to a certain extent when I used a lot of my experiences to a certain extent. I fictionalized some of the things that I used so that I could develop a main character. And since she came from a background that I come from, it was easy to do that because I knew that culture. The other characters, I knew people of that culture, so that helped me a little bit. And then the research that I did, that was just, I loved to research. My mother was a history teacher. And I just was steeped in all kinds of wonderful things that she would bring home and share with us. And I just love history. I adore research. I'm one of those few people that loves to research. And I could get lost for days in the history of like one person who, you know, I had never even heard about. And I had read a tremendous amount, for example, of black history, and I thought I knew a lot about it. And then when I went to do the research, I realized I knew nothing practically compared to what was there and available. Of course, with the wonderful internet, it's as good as the New York Public Library, if not better. So I just got lost in one thing would lead to another, to another, and to another, and it was just fabulous. And I had to know very specific things, which other people may find totally boring, but I found fascinating. For example, one of the things I had to know is what color wool was available for knitting in 1847 in Oregon. Because one of the characters has learned to knit as a way of not only making clothes that are warm, but also of helping her just concentrate on not being upset. And I didn't know anything about knitting per se, and I didn't know anything about knitting in those days, of course. And I had to call a company in Oregon that had existed at that time, that went all the way back, that had history, and ask them, you know, do you know what kind of wool was made? What was wool made of? Was it made of sheep? Was it made of, you know, what animal? And what colors, what kind of dyes did they have in those days? I mean, so it was the research was so specific. And then, you know, things like with the black character and her family, that was a very, many, many generations. And so I had to know, for example, the music that people listened to at the holidays. You know, what holidays did people celebrate in the early 1900s and then the mid-1900s and coming from the South and then to the North and the whole advent of Harlem and all the music of Harlem because one character moves there. And, you know, all of these different things were, you know, had to be researched. So it was, to me, it was pure joy, you know, to find all of these things. And then sometimes I would try to figure out, well, how are these characters connected? And I would think and think, and nothing was coming to me. And then I'd have a dream. I'd go to sleep, and I'd have a dream about these characters. And one day I woke up, I was so shocked by what I had learned.
Well, what was it? You have to share now.
Was that one character was going to actually commit a murder of another character. And I didn't even know they were connected. So it was really it was about prejudice. It was about that they were prejudiced. You know, that was the reason that they were going to kill them. And it was just I was just flawed. And I kept running around my house, and if anyone saw me, they would think I was crazy. But I kept, you're kidding. You're kidding. Really, you're kidding. I couldn't believe it, how it had, you know, just come to me in a dream. So it was a lot of fun. I mean, I lived in my own little world writing this book, of course, but
I'm wondering.
You took it seriously.
I did take it seriously.
I'm just wondering if you might share a little bit of the book with us and read from it.
Oh, sure. Oh, sure. Is there anything specific?
Well, the murder scene sounds really intriguing, but you probably don't want to give that away.
No, we don't want to give that away.
Yeah, so you choose what you'd like to read. This is a real treat.
Okay, let's see if we can read. I don't know how much time there is. What I'd really like to read is the I should have picked something out sooner.
Should have gave you more warning.
Okay. We can talk. We can. I'm looking for the chapter. Okay. Well, so, why don't you ask me another question? I'll find something that I can read here.
Another question. So, what do you think would have happened had you not listened to your dream?
Yeah, great one.
That is great.
Because a lot of people, they either don't remember their dreams or they say, oh, no, it can't be. And then they just poo-poo it and move on, you know.
Well, so, I think that, you know, if you're in the moment, you know, you're really involved in the dream. I'm going to read this one. You're really involved in the dream. You wake up, you know, like from any dream. And some of those dreams really stay with you, you know. A whole day, a whole week, you know, if they're really traumatic, you know, or wonderful for that matter. And that was this experience, you know, and it wasn't just one time. It would happen, you know, on occasion that I would have this dream, or I'd wake up in the morning and I would have a premonition, you know, something more vague than a specific dream. And then I would start writing from that premonition and see where it took me. And a lot of times I ended up just not even knowing. I would write a whole chapter and I had no idea what I was writing. And when I finished reading it, it was like, oh, wow, this is cool. You know, this is really good. And so sometimes people call that channeled writing, you know, and you're not thinking it through. And that began to happen quite a bit with this book. It was just, I felt so strongly that it was meant to be, that it was this calling almost, that I was just obsessed with sitting down and making myself sit down every single day and just write. And that's something that I think is really important. If you're going to be a writer, that you write every day, that you make it your business to write every day, even if it means getting up an hour early, staying up an hour late. And for me, I would stay up till 3, 4, 5 in the morning sometimes. I just couldn't, you know, stop, more or less. Anyway, I found something, if we have time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, just let me know. This is Queens, New York, 1959. After Pearl went to the nursing home, Rita dreamed about her often. In her dreams, it was summer. They were at the beach again, romping in the shallow ocean water. When the dream shifted, Pearl was in her cooking apron, standing in their kitchen, teaching Rita to make chicken soup. Abyssal salt, a little salt, garlic, onion, celery, carrots. Pearl held up the parsnips. This makes it good. Good. Grandma poured some salt into the palm of her hand and tossed it into the boiling water in a wooden bowl. She chopped onions. I'm sorry, it's hard to see over here. She chopped onions, her arms jiggling as she chopped. When she was done, she brushed a few loose strands of hair off her forehead, rinsed her hands, and smiled at Rita. You know, what is next, Bubby? You cut the parsnips and carrots and celery, Rita's gleeful voice echoed in her dream. You will be a good balabusta, a good wife, Pearl smiled through Rita's winding dream. Fleeting images of herself braiding Pearl's long hair drifted in and out. Before long, another dream scene found Rita sitting with someone else who braided her hair. She looked over her shoulder to see a woman who resembled her mother, Lillian, combing and braiding. But Lillian looked different. Her skin was darker, her face gentler, clothes softer. Rita was not herself, either. Before the dream child answered, Rita awoke. She lay still for a moment, trying to recapture the vision. What had the father in the dream asked her to do? Rita reached for her art pad and pencil in the night table drawer. She drew a picture of herself as she had seen herself in the dream, but not with the woman combing her hair. She drew herself with long black hair riding a horse. Rita, dear, are you up? Lillian slowly opened her daughter's bedroom door. Your father wants you to go visit Pearl with him today. I have breakfast ready, she offered. Irene and Tina wanted eggs, so I made scrambled. Rita hid her pad under her pillow. Okay, eggs are fine, Mom, she said, hoping Lillian would not ask about her drawings. She got out of bed and walked to the bathroom. Lillian followed her with a fresh towel from the linen closet. I'll make some toast. Will you do what your father asks? Rita turned and looked at Lillian. What? A memory flashed before her of her dream, of the father in the dream. Your father asked you last night if you would go to Lawnview Manor with him today, remember? Lillian replied. Oh, yes, of course, Rita said, taking the towel from Lillian. She closed the bathroom door. She could not stand the thought of visiting Grandma Pearl in a nursing home. But she did go with her father to visit Pearl that morning, as promised. Rita and David walked down the sterile hallway past the sad eyes of many old people who reached out for attention, for something as simple as and familiar as a smile. Soon Rita and David found Grandma Pearl's room. She sat on a bed in a dark corner, weeping. Mom, David called out to her. Grandma Pearl looked up, but didn't acknowledge Rita. She spoke only to her son. Oi, guten Himmel, O God in heaven, she sobbed, covering her face with her hands. Rita walked closer to her. There was something unrecognizable about Grandma Pearl. Something was obviously different, yet so inconceivable that Rita's mind could not accept what she saw. They had chopped off all of her grandmother's hair, her long, beautiful silver strands gone. Rita gasped, tears swelling up in her eyes, her cheeks burned. She reached out for a hug for her grandmother, but Pearl pushed her away, still sobbing. A few days later, Rita and David returned to the nursing home. Pearl was dying. Rita stood at her grandmother's bedside as the old woman floated in and out of consciousness, not recognizing Rita. Grandma, it's me, Rita whispered desperately. Rita wanted her to respond. She wanted grandmother to know she loved her. She didn't want Pearl to die without forgiving her for what must surely have been Rita's fault. She had not taken good care of her, helped her dial the phone enough, or found a way to take her back to see her brother and friends. Was Grandma Pearl dying of loneliness, of sadness? Rita blamed herself for being so intolerant toward the end. Grandmother, she pleaded. The old mother whimpered. Then Grandma Pearl's eyes glazed or closed. She slept. Shortly after Rita and David returned home, the nursing home doctor phoned. Rita answered the phone. Your mother, Pearl, has passed away, he said. She went peacefully, he continued, seemingly unaware that he was talking to her grandchild, not an adult. She's dead? Peacefully? Rita cried, aghast. How dare the strange man who didn't know grandmother's suffering and courage use such a word? Rita called out for her father to pick up the phone. She ran into her room and slammed the door. At the funeral, David sat next to Lillian, who held Tina on her lap, and Irene and Rita sat by their father's side. David wiped tears from his eyes. Rita put her arm around Irene, who sobbed quietly. But Rita could not cry. She was numb. It was not her grandmother Pearl lying in that casket with short hair. She did not wear makeup, nor did she dress in white lace. Rita could not weep for a dead bride dressed in white with short cropped hair framing her painted face, cold in her open casket. Rita turned cold too. All she could think of was that it was her fault. That night, Rita slept alone in the big bed in Grandma Pearl's room. It took her a long time to fall asleep. In her dream, Rita climbed out the window onto a 3-foot ledge that framed the dormer on the sloping roof. She sat there for a long time looking up at the stars. Then she stood up and jumped off the ledge. But something caught Rita as she fell. It was like a great wind, and suddenly Rita was flying over the tree-lined streets and rooftops. "Don't be afraid," a voice whispered. A flutter of white feathers appeared in her peripheral vision, a sensation of soft goose down. Rita began to rise and swoop like a bird. Then a young man with long dark hair dressed in deerskin pants appeared on horseback. Aglow, he was almost transparent, yet visible. "Remember," he said softly, "you are the one who must remember us." Momentarily, Rita had the sensation of knowing, of understanding, of recognizing the voice, the horse, but it all vanished in an instant. Her dream evaporated as quickly as it had come. What remained was the desire to fly, to be an eagle soaring into the starry night. She didn't want the feeling to ever end. But a chill woke her. She felt her body's weight in the pull of gravity. Semi-conscious and with her eyes still closed, she groped near her feet for a blanket. Not locating the cover, Rita peeked down at her legs, squinting in the light of a bright sunrise. Then her eyes opened wide. With a gasp, she sat up. She was perched precariously on the edge of the roof.
Oh, wow. She woke up and she was on the roof.
So that's a little piece of the story.
So you said you're writing a sequel.
Yes, I am writing a sequel. And the sequel's exciting and exciting me. I mean, I'm excited about it. And I'm about 10 chapters into it, I would say. And they're not when I'm writing this one, I'm trying to use what I learned in the writing of this, because I had a wonderful developmental editor. A developmental editor looks at the book and says, you know, chapter 5 really doesn't belong there. Chapter 5 really belongs in chapter 10, you know, chapter 10. And she was an amazing person. I mean, she wrote me 25 pages of notes about the book when I sent it to her. And I completely rewrote the book from the developmental edit. And what I learned from her was really important, the information that she shared with me. So I'm trying very, very hard in the second one to not make the same mistakes, although I have a tendency to do that. This next book is it's going to continue with some of the same character, not all, just the main character mostly. And then it's going to have the same premise, but it's going to take place in a lot of different places. So there's a 13th century person, and there's a character, and there's a who lives during the time of the Spanish Inquisition. So you can imagine the research. And then there's another character who I was actually going to put in this book, and she's a French character who lives during the time of the French Revolution, which is a whole quagmire to research too. But she's going to come about in this second book. So that one takes the time frame expands mm-hmm. in that book.
And then you also said the places will expand as well.
Yeah, so Spain, France, the United States, a few other countries. Mm-hmm. And then eventually there's a third book. Mm-hmm. Oh. It's a trilogy. And the third book, I'm hoping, will expand further. I'd like to include characters from a lot of different cultures. So I'm trying to expand the cultural aspect of that. So it's not only the United States, but so with international.
So how long have you been writing this one, and will it take 10 years?
No, absolutely not. Oh, absolutely not. Mm-hmm. No. I've been writing it for about 6 months, and I intend to be finished with it maybe 2 years at the very most. Mm. Only because, you know, once you start, people want it. They want a second. People have already asked me, when's the next one coming? When's the next one coming? So it's important to keep people's interest, you know, to be writing a lot. I do have a poetry book, though, that I'm going to publish in the sort of interim just to keep things going. Mm-hmm.
Well, what's it called and how do we get it?
Oh, the poetry book. Yeah. it's called The Dream Garden. I haven't actually decided on a name. It's had a few names since, and I probably will self-publish it. Mm-hmm. And it'll be this one is available. Bleed Through is available on Amazon.com, and it is just a text, you know, a hard copy book right now. I will make an ebook. I am negotiating with an agent at the moment to see about rights. I'm learning all about these, you know, I'm still learning about the publishing field. So
could you, before we move on, could you please spell your name for folks? Because Ian is might be.
It's Hebrew. It's A-Y-I-N.
Okay.
A-Y-I-N. Weaver, W-E-A-V-E-R.
And so go on to Amazon.com, look for either Bleed Through or your name.
Right. Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. And the Bleed Through, it's important to look both at the title and my name, because apparently titles are not copyrighted, and so people can use the same title. There were three people who published some type of book called Bleed Through the exact same year that I published this, and I had had this name forever, and it's sort of integrated into the story. So it was really funny. But, one was a YA book, one was a poetry book, and therefore, you know, I didn't – at first I was, wow, and then I just said, okay, whatever. You know, that people will find it if they need to find it. But titles are funny.
Are you going to make an audiobook? I'm just when you're reading it.
Oh, I'd love to make an audiobook, and it's something that I recently went to a conference and was listening to people talk about audiobooks. It's a very costly procedure, and they don't like you to read your own book. Mm-hmm. I think I could do an okay job, but it's a big deal, you know, recording studio and editing and all of that stuff. But it's really important, I think, to do an audiobook. Mm-hmm. So it will come about at some point. Yeah, definitely.
We're getting close to the end of our show, and we always like to ask our guests for advice to or suggestions to the listener.
Uh-huh.
What words of wisdom do you have for someone who would like to write their book and they haven't known how to start or how to continue?
Mm. Well, those are two different questions, starting and continuing. but starting, don't think, just write. Don't think, just write. Sit down every day and write something, even if it's just a line or two. And the other thing that makes it really easy is, and somebody taught me this, and it was a wonderful, wonderful, and it's actually the way the story of Clara in this book started. One of the characters actually started this way. I went to a writing workshop or group, and the woman said, okay, I'm going to name a time in your life, and I want you to write whatever comes to mind. And so she said, okay, you're 15. Mm. And that, if you could remember, you know, you're a teenager, you know, and just write anything that you remember. And so I started writing. And then she had us write in the present tense as if we were there. I am 15, mm-hmm. and I am doing this, right? And these were the things that we went on for several different weeks. She would say, I am there, I am there, I am there. And she'd give us different ages, different places, different, you know, prompts, basically. And out of those prompts of being in the came a spontaneity of writing that was so wonderful and magical. So that's something people could do. Mm. As far as getting stuck, dance, sing, dream.
Oh, thank you so much for being such a terrific guest on
wonderful.
Our show.
Thank you.
Ian, thank you so much. I'm sorry that the hour has gone by.
Oh, it's wonderful. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Just remember, everybody, just like Ian, you too can be living proof that through sharing your story, you can help our community be visible and be seen and embraced as vibrant, proud, and courageous. We'll be back next month. Until then,
good night.
Tune in next Sunday night for Outbeat Music with Michaela Kennan. That's at 8 p.m. and only here on KRCB Radio. And don't forget to download the KRCB mobile app for your Apple or Android device. You can take your favorite KRCB radio programs like Outbeat with you anywhere in the world with internet access. It's free and available right now. Support for Outbeat Radio and KRCB FM comes from members and from the New Art Museum of Sonoma County, celebrating its grand opening on Saturday, April 11th, at 7th and B Street with Studio 54 fundraising party. There'll be art, food, disco, DJs, and an art auction. Proceeds support the new museum's art exhibition programs. The new Studio 54 fundraising party runs from 7:30 to 11 p.m. Tickets and more information are available right now at artmsc.org. That's artmsc.org. You're listening to KRCB FM Windsor Santa Rosa Radio 91. Online all the time at krcb.org. It's just before 9 p.m. Stay with us. Open Space District is next.
Change, yeah. So do it today, yeah. 'Cause I can see your